three main points I want to make. And they are as follows. I'll just give you the bottom line right up front and then get into some details and talk as fast as I can because there's an awful lot to cover. Number one, most polls of Arab public opinion, with some exceptions that I will get to, are just not very reliable for purely professional reasons. And most published analyses of, quote, Arab world, unquote, or, quote, Muslim world, unquote, opinion are even less reliable. This is because, again, with some exceptions, most of those are severely slanted. In a few cases, so much so that they verge on fraudulent, as I will show. Number two. Even the few cases of good data about Arab people's opinions tell us very little about actual Arab popular behavior. And they tell us even less about Arab government policies. As a result, even the best polls are not a very useful guide for U.S. policy. Number three, there is, however, one very important but largely unrecognized pair of solid findings confirmed by many different polls that do have real implications for U.S. policy. Those findings are as follows. Over the past 3 or 4 years, there has been a dramatic decline in popular support for Al-Qaeda, for Osama bin Laden, or for any acts of terrorism against civilians, explicitly including American civilians, in almost every Arab society polled. Equally important, this dramatic change has occurred without any improvement in the heavily negative Arab public's view of the United States. How this apparent paradox can be true and what it means for American policy will be the subject of my conclusion. But first, let me explain why most of the other data from these polls are unreliable. The first part of the explanation is pretty plain. There are major problems with how these polls are designed, and there are also major problems with how they are conducted. This is not necessarily the fault of the pollsters, but rather of the conditions in most of the Arab countries where they have to work. Most Arab governments drastically restrict any political polling, and most Arab publics are understandably very reluctant to speak frankly about politics to strangers. This first and most fundamental problem can best be illustrated with an anecdote or two from my own firsthand experience. Because political polling has been taboo in these countries, some pollsters are forced to sneak political questions onto seemingly innocent consumer market research surveys. So back in the 1990s, one actual such questionnaire that I came across began like this. Question one, when you want to make a major purchase for your home, which is more important to you, price or quality? Question number two, and if the price and the quality are about the same, would you rather buy an imported product or a domestic product? Question number three. Now, speaking of foreign countries, what do you think about Saddam's invasion of Kuwait? I'm not making this up. You couldn't make this stuff up, okay? On a later occasion, I personally observed in the actual fieldwork for a poll, a whole battery of political questions that was tacked on to a first set of questions about Legos, right? The popular plastic children's toy, in case anyone here doesn't know. And at the end of one such interview, and I wrote just a little bit about this in the book, you can read a little more about it if you like. At the end of one such interview, I remember that as a courtesy, we interviewers asked the respondent if he had any questions for us. And what he said was, well, actually, I kind of think I see where you're coming from and who you really are. But there is one question that I have. What is the connection between politics and Legos? Also, true story. And finally, one last anecdote. On still another occasion, I asked a field supervisor in the Middle East how he managed to poll in places like Lebanon or even Syria. Well, he said, pretty much all he had to do, if anyone asked any questions, was tell people which warlord was his cousin. And then if that didn't work, he said, he would take out his Syrian-issued permit to carry weapons and show it. And that usually allayed, or maybe reinforced, but in any case, got rid of people's concerns. At which point, and this I did not write about, actually, but I'll tell you about it. At which point, this guy's boss, the polling director for a major company in the region, interrupted this conversation and tried to joke. Oh, sure, he said, Muhammad, like you'd really pull out your shotgun in downtown Damascus or something. At which point, Muhammad, the field supervisor, said, no, 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 not at all. Not my shotgun, my pistol. And he actually reached into his belt and pulled it out right before my very eyes. This was polling with a twist, you might say. At which point, the polling director, who is still working in the region for some of the most reputable pollsters, which I will not mention, it's not Gallup, at which point the polling director said, more coffee, David? And again, no elaboration or exaggeration. These things really happened. Well, today things are a little bit easier, but not much. Few pollsters admit it. And Gallup, I want to emphasize, is an honorable exception. But pollsters have to get official permission for their polls in most Arab states. Their questionnaires are often censored. I list some examples in my paper, and I urge you to find them. Moreover, certain major countries, such as Saudi Arabia, allow some pollsters, but not others, to operate there, with all of the questions this raises about results from those polls. Similar questions arise about Saudi or other sponsorship of the analysis or dissemination of poll results from anywhere in the region or even beyond. To get around this sort of thing, even today, one leading pollster just told me that he still resorts to tricks like this. He purposely hires mukhabarat, or secret police agents, as part-time interviewers so that they will unofficially allow his polls to proceed. And then he simply discards their completed questionnaires. But on some occasions, he confided, agents from a rival secret police unit got wise to this scheme. Instead of reporting it, they arrested some of the interviewers and held them for ransom. The problem was settled for the equivalent of about $1,500, this pollster told me. But he can never be sure about his next poll. In such conditions, you can well imagine how intimidated or inhibited many poll respondents must feel. As one Arab-American academic pollster, Professor Amaneh Jamal at Princeton, has written, quote, when I began my research, I became aware of the difficulties of conducting research in a semi-democratic environment where fear and skepticism prevail. This is above and beyond the special demographic challenges of sampling Arab societies, which I discuss in my paper and would be happy to address in the Q&A. But for now, let's move on to the equally serious problem of how these polls are designed. And here I would like to focus on just two big issues: how countries are arbitrarily selected for or omitted from Arab world or Muslim world, in quotes, polls, number one, and number two, how loaded questions often skew the findings. About country selection, I will be very brief. One could take the Zogby polls, which typically, year after year, sample 6 Arab countries, and suppose or declare, assert, that they are somehow together representative of the, quote, Arab world, unquote. Well, Egypt makes sense, I guess, as by far the largest Arab state. But why are the other ones almost always Morocco, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, Jordan, and the UAE? Why not Algeria, or Yemen, or Kuwait, or Sudan, or even Iraq? The Pew polls, which claim to represent the Muslim world, or the Program for International Policy Attitudes polls at the University of Maryland, which claim to represent the Muslim world, not just the Arab world, offer results from as few as just 4 countries, and sometimes as many, and I'm being a little sarcastic here, I have to admit, as 10 different countries out of about 50 predominantly Muslim countries in the world. Gallup does better with over 30 countries, but much of the analysis is based on just 10. And in all of these so-called samples of the Arab or Muslim world, certain countries are regularly and heavily overrepresented. Only about a quarter of Muslims worldwide are Arabs. Why then, in almost every poll of the so-called Muslim world, are half the countries Arab countries? We can talk more about this in the discussion, but I want to move on to what I think is probably the single worst problem with polls from the region, and that is biased questions, loaded questions. The University of Maryland's Program for International Policy Attitudes poll includes, just to take one example, this question. Quote, do you agree with Al-Qaeda's goal of standing up to America and affirming the dignity of the Islamic people? As if those two ideas were inseparable and equivalent. Standing up to America and affirming the dignity of the Islamic people. Imagine the outcry, and rightly so, if an American poll asked whether respondents agreed with the goal of, quote, affirming the dignity of America by standing up to Islamic countries, unquote. Other questions in this poll are almost as bad, giving heavily negative clues about American policy by asking if respondents agree that the U.S., quote, wants to divide and weaken the Muslim world or control its oil, or if the U.S. should remove its troops from Arab and Islamic countries or stop supporting Israel. The Zogby polls, which are used by Professor Shibli Telhami, also at the University of Maryland, including his latest round, released just this week, feature these questions. Quote, how important a priority is the Palestinian issue for you? Unquote. Quote, which consequence of the Iraq war concerns you the most? Unquote. Quote, which aspect of Al-Qaeda do you admire the most, if any, unquote. These are all clearly loaded questions. A slightly more subtle bias is evident in another question in this series about U.S. democracy promotion in the region. And I cite this because it's a problem that afflicts many, many questions in many other polls. And it's the problem that I call, I've coined a name for it, based on the car industry, I guess. I call it options loading, okay? And what that means is that when you ask a question, you give 3 options, 2 of which point in one direction and the third in the other. Just by setting up the question that way, you are predetermining which way the responses are going to fall, no matter what the subject or what the other words in the question might be. So that, When Zogby and Talhami ask about U.S. democracy promotion in the Arab world, the options are A, it is not an important U.S. objective, B, it is an important U.S. objective, but the U.S. is going about it in the wrong way. Two negative options right up front. Or one sort of positive option. It is an important U.S. objective and may have positive results. Well, if you load the options by giving two negative ones and one positive ones, you're going to get negative answers. And sure enough, that's what the poll produces, unlike many other polls on the same question. But pride of place goes to another Zogby poll. This time, I want to make clear, not used by Professor Talhami, which is focused on the issue of Darfur. And I'm dwelling on this at some length because I think it's an egregious case, but not altogether atypical. And this question in a recent Zogby poll goes like this. Quote, please tell me if you strongly agree, somewhat disagree, or strongly disagree with the following statement. I believe that because Sudan is an Arab or Muslim in Turkey and Malaysia, where the poll was also taken, nation, because Sudan is an Arab or a Muslim nation, other Arabs or other Muslims should care just as much about Darfur as they would about the Arab-Israeli conflict or the conflict in Iraq. Can you follow all that? Well, basically what he's doing is asking a question in order to get a certain answer by loading the question in a way that first asks respondents to agree to something, which every social science researcher knows is instantly going to bias the results toward agreement. It's called courtesy bias. Secondly, by offering the respondents a reason to agree with the statement, Sudan is a Muslim or an Arab country, but not a reason to disagree with it, okay? And third, and this is the most insidious bias of all because it's not visible in the text of the question, by preceding that question with other questions which tell the respondents that 400,000 Muslims have been killed in Darfur. I'm quoting directly from the questionnaire. That 2.5 million people have been driven from their homes and that Muslim nations intervened in Bosnia to aid their Muslim population. Well, after you tell the respondent all of that and then you load the question, what answer are you going to get? Of course, you're going to get the answer that you wanted to get. And that is why Zogby Polls puts this notice in their website, and I am quoting, the full results and subtotals belong exclusively to the client who has the sole right to release or withhold the information. This makes our monthly polls particularly effective for advocacy groups who hope to convince elected officials that the public is on their side. Zogby said it, not me. Now, there are some technical fixes that some people have proposed for some of these polls. And I want to, as briefly as I can, I don't want to get very technical, as briefly as I can, I want to discuss three. Inter-pollster reliability. That's a somewhat jargony way of just saying, well, compare different polls, okay? And that gives you some sense of some kind of a reality check on whether they're really measuring something significant. Yeah, well, the problem is that if the polls are all bad, then comparing them doesn't get you anywhere. Or if there aren't enough polls to compare with each other, which is usually the case in the Arab world, inter-pollster reliability is simply not a test that you can perform. And third, when there are comparable polls from different pollsters, the results don't usually match very well, in my experience. And I have a lot of examples of this, of wildly different results from a poll, say, in Morocco that was taken by three different pollsters in the same time period, or from a poll in Egypt that was taken by two different pollsters in the same time period, and so on and so on. But I'm not going to go into detail. We can talk about that later. I do want to point out this. On key issues, there are disturbing discrepancies. Specifically, the Zoghbi polls that were also used by Professor Telkhami, including his latest data from last month, often show substantial popular support in several Arab states for the radicals in the region: Hamas, Hezbollah, Nasrallah, Iran, even Ahmadinejad. But most other polls, such as the Pew, the Program for International Policy Attitudes, and single country polls by local researchers, generally show much lower levels of support or even opposition to those figures and those governments, even among Shiites in Lebanon. Details of this discrepancy from one poll to another are also in the paper. Now, there are two important exceptions. There are two places where there is good inter-pollster reliability in the Arab world. And they're exactly the ones, I think, that surprise a lot of people. These are the Palestinians and the Iraqis. The most dangerous in some respects, and also the most polled places in the entire Arab world, because they're very interesting and important, I guess, and because, especially in the Palestinian case, local pollsters have a long, honorable tradition of doing credible polls, despite all the obstacles. And I'm proud to say that I helped train them to do that many years ago. The results from these polls, I might mention just very briefly, are also exactly the opposite of what many people think and what you're most likely to read in the New York Times or some other major paper. Recently, for example, the New York Times ran a headline that said, Hamas gains favor. I think that was the exact, you know, the main headline. Well, yeah, but buried in the story was the poll finding, which I think is correct, that Fatah is actually still ahead. In Iraq, you are likely to read headlines that talk about how terrible things are and how bad the Iraqis feel. Yeah, it's true. But what's also true is that the latest poll shows that a solid majority of Iraqis do not want the United States to leave their country anytime soon. Only 28% now do. And even larger majorities of Iraqis, and I think these are credible figures for reasons that I can go into in great detail if you like, an even larger majority of Iraqis, somewhere around 80% or more, want specifically and explicitly want the United States to stay in Iraq in order to help root out al-Qaeda, defend the country from Iran or Turkey, and provide economic and reconstruction and military security assistance. What you will also not see in any headlines, at least, about polls from Iraq is that the major communities in that country are actually converging to some extent in their opinions over the last couple of years. There's very good polling data on this. Shiites, Sunnis, and Kurds in Iraq are moving, one might say, towards something a little bit closer to what I sometimes laughingly call a situation of consensual sects. Okay. Now, another another technical fix that people try to use is to do trend analysis. Pollsters say the trend is your friend, all right? Maybe any single poll is just a snapshot and an imperfect one, but if you pile them up over a period of time, then you get some real data, something really significant. Once again, the trend is only as good as the individual polls that make it up. If those polls are bad, if the questions were loaded, if the respondents were intimidated, if the pollster is faking, the trend doesn't mean a thing. And again, without going into great detail, there's much more about this in the text of the paper. There are many cases where trends are used that are simply, in my judgment, unprofessional to the point of, as I said in my introduction, of being almost fraudulent. The last technical fix that I will mention is using phone poles. To get around the problem, people think of being able to talk to strangers, especially women, of being subject to government surveillance or something like that, of going into countries that don't allow polling altogether, but you can dial them up from across the border, like Syria or Iran, or in many cases, Saudi Arabia. Some pollsters have tried to use telephone poles recently. The problem with this technical fix is, to put it crudely, I guess, too many wrong numbers. And what I mean by that is two things. First, whether it makes sense to us or not, Arab culture typically is such that people are more willing to talk to strangers more freely in person than they are over the telephone. It might seem illogical to a Western sensibility because phone calls seem somehow anonymous and confidential. Of course, they're not. Anybody can listen in. But in Arab society, if you actually go to somebody's house, he is more willing, or she is more willing, to talk to you, even if he doesn't or she doesn't know you, than would be the case from some kind of random phone call. And so phone polls actually make the whole problem of intimidation, government controls, social taboos, and all of that worse, not better. And in order to prove this point, I want to cite for you just two results from two phone polls that were conducted and highly publicized recently in two different Arab countries, Syria and Saudi Arabia. In Syria, 90% of the respondents in a recent phone poll said that they had voted in the last Syrian presidential and parliamentary elections. And 90% of the respondents said that those elections were free and fair. I leave it to you to judge the sincerity and the credibility of those numbers. Even the Syrian government doesn't claim anywhere near a 90% turnout in any of these elections. In Saudi Arabia, a recent telephone poll, which made big headlines in the American press, featured this result, which the pollster did not highlight in his report, but which I found by doing some digging. 95% of people in Saudi Arabia, did you know this? Give King Abdullah a favorable rating. Now, isn't that something? So, enough about phone polls. And now, in the little time that I have left, although there's so much more that I could talk about, I want to focus on the one result that I think is valid and what it means for American policy. And that is the finding, as I said in my introduction, that popular support for Al-Qaeda and other forms of terrorism in every single Arab country polled, except for the Palestinians, popular support for that has declined dramatically in the last few years, even though the image of the United States and of American policies remains very low. There are lots of data behind this assertion that, again, you can find in my paper. What I want to focus on here are a couple of other related questions. Number one, how is it possible that these two things can be happening simultaneously? Does this mean that Arab support or opposition to Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, other forms of terrorism, suicide bombing, however you want to phrase the question, and some questions like Pew's are phrased in a fairly inflammatory way and still get very low levels of support today. How is it possible that that can be happening while support for the United States is still at rock bottom levels? Does this mean that those two issues aren't really closely related? Yeah, that's exactly what it means. And this seemingly paradoxical finding is the most reliable, the most important, the most policy relevant finding from any of the polls from this part of the world that you are likely to see, I believe, anytime soon. What then does explain the declining, steeply declining levels of popular Arab support for Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, suicide bombing, and other forms of terrorism, including terrorism against Americans? What explains it, and the circumstantial evidence for this, is very clear. In country after country, one country at a time, that's the way to do this analysis, and every polling analysis from the region. In country after country, from Morocco to Jordan to Saudi Arabia to Iraq to Egypt, and beyond the Arab world, in Turkey, in Indonesia, in Pakistan, whenever there is a major terrorist event inside that country, popular support for any form of terrorism against civilians immediately goes way down and stays way down for years afterward. And I want to take one recent example of this from Pakistan, a non-Arab country, a little bit outside the main focus of my paper or my presentation, but it's a startling example. After Benazir Bhutto was killed by a suicide bomber, Pakistani popular support for terrorism went way down. And Pakistani support for cooperation with the United States against terrorism, that's the way the question was worded, doubled almost instantaneously to almost 90%. The headlines, I suppose, that you all read from the same poll talked about how low our friend Pervez Musharraf had sunk in popular opinion. Yeah, that was true. But the same poll showed that Pakistani popular opposition to Al-Qaeda and support for American efforts against Al-Qaeda had doubled almost overnight to 89%. What does this mean for U.S. policy? And I will end with this. I think it means three things. Number one, take all of these polls with a shaker of salt. And even more important, never trust any one poll or any one pollster. Always look for results from several different pollsters over a period of time before reaching any conclusions about this subject. Number two, in public diplomacy, there's a part of the war for hearts and minds that the United States is winning. Not perhaps because of anything that we've done, but because Muslims themselves are getting disgusted with terrorism against innocent civilians. Most Muslims, most of the time, in most places, against most civilians. Israelis may be exempt from this, and I have some data about that that I can talk about if you like. What we should do if we are winning this battle, this part of the war, is to try to consolidate that victory. That's what our public diplomacy should be focused on, not on loose talk about shared values, which the data suggest are very loose, if shared at all. And I can talk at much greater length about that, although I think Dalia will also offer her views on that subject. And finally, do not assume, and the Institute under Rob's leadership and with my participation is going to be doing more research on this very shortly. Do not assume that any of these public opinion trends, even the real ones, are going to have a visible, a significant, a lasting, or maybe not even any effect, either on actual behavior by the publics in these countries in the forms of demonstrations or riots or other activities that might have a political content, or in the form of the policies of Arab governments, which are without exception autocratic and only indirectly connected to public opinion, or on the long-term political stability of those governments, which may or may not depend, and I emphasize, may or may not depend on their popular approval or on their public's perception of the policies that they pursue. With that, I thank you very much for your patience and attention. And